Good afternoon, and welcome to PBS Expeditions, celebrating diversity and loving it. This is Nevin Campanella, your PBS Expeditions reporter. Excuse me, folks. I'm suffering from a bout of pneumonia, and I know my voice is very gravelly. Just tune in and try to relax with it. You'll hear me coughing quite a bit, but we'll get through it. Our goal is to investigate and report adventures of the human spirit and heart. And this can be anything from tracking big UFOs to searching for the best restaurants on the planet. Now, I know that sounds like a wide, wide variety. And it is. We investigate everything and anything on PBS Expeditions. Actually, I'm eventually hoping to do some shows on site. And please, join us in our adventures by calling into our show. Our U.S. toll-free number is 1-888-268-4313. And our international number is 1-530-876-3222. It's been a wonderful afternoon, folks. We had our first Earth Files broadcast from Linda Moulton Howe. And let me tell you, it was absolutely fantastic. What came out on that radio kind of blew me away. Lovely lady, wonderful expert reporter. I'm telling you, this lady really knows what she's doing. Before we get to our afternoon adventure, I do have a few announcements to make. Well, I told you about my voice. I went through 4 weeks of pneumonia, and my voice has been recovering very slowly. And as a matter of fact, I'm a little disappointed. I really thought it would be much better by now. It is possible, folks, I've been told recently, that if I have scar tissue on my vocal cords, I may not get full voice recovery. So I just have to hang in there. We got an excellent show planned for you this afternoon. Right now, I need to make an announcement about PBS News. We are looking for people who would like to become part of our broadcasting system. We are in need of reporters for both PBS News and TNT Radio. You don't need experience. We will train you. So give us a call on our international number, 1-530-876-3222, or send me an email, nevin@bloginservice.com. Also, PBS has recently moved to a new location. Whoops, excuse me, I'm getting a note. Oh, live calls is 1-530-876-3222. PBS has recently moved to a new location in Paradise, California, and our new equipment requires some adjustments. Therefore, it is possible that you may experience some interruption during the show. Okay, I'm waiting for our scheduled guest. Our subject is crop circles. Before bringing on our guest, I will read a passage about crop circles from Wikipedia, the online encyclopedia. Quote, the phenomena of crop circles became generally known in the 1970s after the start of the hoaxes perpetrated by Bauer and Chorley. To date, thousands of circles have appeared at sites across the world from disparate locations, such as the former Soviet Union, the UK, and Japan, as well as the US and Canada. Hold on, folks. Well, what about crop circles? Well, we're waiting to try to make a connection with England. You know, I've been hearing about it, seeing pictures of them for the past 10 years. There is so much controversy regarding crop circles. It's hard to arrive at a conclusion. But we have have an expert with us today. And I think our expert is almost getting ready. Today's show is an investigation and discussion of crop circles with Ms. Lucy Pringle, founder, member, and chairman of UNIX, Unexplained Phenomena Research Society. She is widely known and is international authority on the subject and the pioneer researcher into the effects of electromagnetic fields on living systems. This includes the physiological and psychological effects reported by people after visiting or being in the vicinity of a crop formation. Also, animal behavior, remote effects. Her research shows measured changes in the human hormones following short exposure to circles. Also, changes in brain activity. Hi, Lucy. Welcome to BBS Expeditions.
Thank you very much indeed.
Lucy, before we get into the main subject, would you tell us a little bit about your background? How did you become involved in crop circles?
Well, I suppose it's due to the fact that I've always been interested in anything which is unexplained. Going right back to a child, and then I was trying to find out where paradise was as a child. None of the adults could tell me where paradise was. And then I came on to the Loch Ness Monster, and then I came on to Einstein's theory of relativity, and then I came on to thinking about infinity. Now, that was a terrific bother to me, infinity.
I
fell into the crop circle world. And I was invited to be one of the founding members of the first academic society. And I learned what it was to become used to the ineffable, the unexplained. And now infinity doesn't bother me anymore. And that's fine. Yep. That is, so long as this crop circle phenomena remains unexplained, I'm with it.
Well, Lucy, I want to read a little something to you. From what people read on the net. This is from the Wikipedia encyclopedia. And then what I would like you to do is respond to it.
Okay.
Quote, the phenomena of crop circles became generally known in the 1970s after the start of the hoaxes perpetrated by Bauer and Chorley. To date, thousands of circles have appeared at sites across the world from disparate locations, such as the former Soviet Union, the UK, and Japan, as well as U.S. and Canada. Now, tell me, Lucy, what was it about the 70s that all of a sudden brings this out?
What was it what? Sorry, could you repeat that? Could you repeat that?
Okay, what is it about the 1970s that brought forth these hoaxes?
The hoaxes.
Any of them, especially the ones by Bauer and Chorley?
Well, Bauer and Chorley, I don't really think they were quite credible, because it was almost as though they had learned a script. Doug Bauer was rather more adept at learning the scripts than Dave Chorley. And for instance, if you got them at two ends of a room and you ask one question and you ask the other the same question, you get two totally different answers.
Uh-huh.
And Dave Chorley, in fact, was such a liability, he became such a liability that he was packed off to Australia. He got his script right.
Well, Lucy, you've done so much work in the field. Your website is filled with photographs, articles.
Yeah. Some of those are man-made ones. There's no doubt about it. There is a human element involved in some of them.
Yes, that is
without doubt.
Yeah. I know we've been through this before, but I want to ask you again. I want to make sure the audience hears how they can get a hold of your book, Crop Circles, The Greatest Mystery of Modern Times.
Well, now I've only got a few copies left because it's out of print. But they can get in touch with me by getting onto my website or emailing me. And my website is www.lucypringle.co.uk. And I have got a few copies left. And it's very special.
Well, let's start with the obvious. I'm going to sort of pretend I don't know anything. So tell us, what is a crop circle? How are they made and who is making them?
Well, I'm not certain I can get answer the last. Crop circles are depressions in the crop. And what is particularly stunning about them is the very neat cut-off point between the fallen crop, the flattened crop, and the standing crop outside. In the genuine one, the crop isn't damaged at all, and it continues to grow. In the man-made ones, there are all sorts of evidential facts. In fact, you can discover, if you're lucky enough to be one of the first people in, such as, well, really what we do, when we go into a crop circle physically on the ground, we are looking to see if any weight has been applied, i.e. if there's any human involvement. Now, in the immature crop, that is the green crop before it has ripened, if a board, or which they use a planking a board, you can see quite clearly where the board has been. You can see little indentations. In the ripened crop, we look to see if any of the seeds have been knocked out, and you can look on the ground and you can see the seeds lying on the ground, the stems are crushed. And also, when the crop gets very, very ripe, the seed head sort of falls back against the stem, and it's very brittle. And they'd have to use a rope, and the rope would have to be stretched across the top of the crop, so to speak. And it quite often it flicks off the seed head. So that's another thing you look for. Look for stems which actually don't have any seeds on them, seed heads on them.
Lucy, is it true that the intricate crop circles could not be man-made?
Well, I think it would be very, very difficult because you only have a certain amount of hours of darkness in the summer when these things occur. And they are so incredibly accurate mathematically and geometrically that it is, you'd be very hard pushed, because another thing, when you go into a field, you can only see a few feet or yards in front of you. You certainly can't see hundreds of feet or even 1,000 feet. We have had ones 1,000 feet in diameter, and there's no way you can see as far as that. So when you're getting something as absolutely geometrically perfect there are examples, I mean, it just takes your breath away. Some of the man-made ones, they look fantastic from the air. But this is where my photography comes in, because the geometers then use my overhead photographs, and they draw up the geometry from my photographs. And there are so many mistakes in the man-made ones. And one very interesting little fact, my neighbor, who unfortunately is now dead, he was the first man to do the really professional surveys of the circles. This was in the early 1990s. He was a chartered surveyor. And he kept on finding an angle that really annoyed him, a sort of 19 point whatever it was, and he used to even it up to 19.5. And then a colleague of mine at a particular lecture was talking about an angle of 19.47 degrees. And I realized that this was the angle that Peter Bailey was finding. Now, what's interesting about that is that it's universal primary geometry. And the red spot on Jupiter, Mount Olympus on Mars, and the volcano Mauna Loa in Hawaii, they're all located at a latitude of 19.47 degrees. And when a ship goes along, or even a little duck swims in the water, The weight, their weight, is exactly 19.47 degrees. It's known as the Kelvin wedge. It's also found in the tetrahedral geometry in the construction of the pyramids. And well, to find that in the crop circles is mind-blowing.
On your website, is there a comparison of real to phony? In other words, can people go on your website and take a look and say, Lucy says this is real, Lucy says this is
phony? No, I don't. I don't make statements like that for the very reason that I don't manage to go into all the circles that I photograph. So therefore, I'd have comments against some and not against others, which really wouldn't be very fair.
Yes.
I think, and also many of them, I don't get in soon enough. The trouble is, you know, that this is becoming a tourist industry, and we get hordes of people coming from all over the world. And I think some of the farmers, in order to make some money, they notify the tour operators. And literally, as soon as the circle appears, you get all these little buses coming down, charabancs coming down, and hordes of people, they flock into the circle like sort of ants.
And everybody tramping all over.
And you can't, the evidence is gone. So what I have to say is that an awful lot of circles, I have no opinion. I was not there when they formed. I was not able to make a physical evaluation. And unless they are strikingly obvious as being man-made, or the geometry is strikingly brilliant, you have to say, I just have no opinion. I can have no opinion.
Is there any evidence that demonstrates how quickly these are made? In other words, people are staring at a field, and let's say it's dark, then 20 minutes later, all of a sudden, there's a crop circle. Do we have any anecdotal records like that?
Well, in my book, in The Greatest Mystery of Modern Times, I interviewed hundreds of people. It was actually, I love people. I'm a very gregarious person, and I really enjoyed interviewing people. But I discarded all of them, apart from three people. Now, they didn't know each other, but quite independently, the thing that got me was that they all described the time scale in which these occurred. And it was between 4 and 7 seconds.
Absolutely amazing.
And these were daytime. These were daytime events. And one man actually, he fainted. He was a young lad working on a farm in, I think it was Lincolnshire. And this force came, and the crop just literally started to fall, and he fainted. And he didn't dare tell anybody. He now lives in Australia, and he's over 70. And I was the first person he told. And he didn't dare tell anybody in case he lost his job. Other people keep very quiet about it in case if they tell somebody down at the pub, they're going to be ridiculed. So a lot of people keep very, very quiet about this sort of thing.
Well, in the geometry itself, do you believe that there is a message of some sort
in the geometry? Well, not necessarily in the geometry, but I think many people liken the shapes to certain symbolism. I.e., if you're a chemist, you will see a chemical representation. If you're interested in the organic, like you'll see. A sort of relationship to an animal or some other living organism. The diatonic ratios, which is the white notes on a piano, they are found in the crop circles in the ratios of the mathematics. If you're a chemist, if you're a biologist, if you're a theologian, this, I think, is one of the marvelous things about this phenomenon, is there is a meaning to it for everybody, no matter what your area of research or learning or interest may be.
Well, what would be your opinion concerning the reason for all this? I mean, we have some force producing crop circles around the planet, but the question I've always got, Lucy, is
yes.
Why?
Why? Well, my belief, and I sort of changed. So this is a moving phenomenon, so far as I'm concerned. At the moment, I'm saying, and I believe that it's a means of communication, and this is where, just as I was saying a moment ago, it is there for everybody, because no matter what your interest is, you will be able to find a meaning for you yourself, a communication, if you like. And it's up to the individual to interpret it as they see fit, or as their interest lies.
Well, if it is a communication, typically, communication is a two-way thing. If
yes.
Something is communicating with me, I believe in my own mind there's an expectation I should communicate back. People make that attempt?
Well, yes, they do. And in fact, there are a couple of Germans who come over every year, and they're very, very honest, and they ask the farmer's permission if they make a circle on whichever farmer it is, their land. And they never try and hide it. They tell everybody that they've made this particular one. So they're not out to try and be devious or difficult or anything. And yes, they do try. There was also a group who did a meditation one evening. And they meditated on a certain symbol, and within a very short time, one almost identically the same appeared. And I had another very, very strange experience. This phenomenon is full of strange experiences, and my book is full of these strange experiences too. I ran a little society called UNEX, which was Unexplained Phenomenal Research Society. And I used to engage lots of speakers to speak on a monthly basis. And one of them was somebody called Dr. Serena Roney Dougal, who had a PhD in parapsychology. And she was talking about dreams and the power of our dreams and the way the little chemicals in our brain, the melatonin, the serotonin, and how the pinealine all start to act at the times of the evening. And how eventually we fall asleep and we dream. And there are many different sort of dreams, sort of deep psychotherapy ones, sort of the lucid ones, sort of the dreams into cognitive ones. She was saying how really, if you're in the middle of a lucid dream, you can actually control the dream. You can control the process, the passage of the dream, if you like. But she was also saying that if you particularly wanted to dream about a subject, if you made an affirmation before you went to sleep about the subject about which you wanted to dream, and you also said that you would record that dream, you would remember that dream, she said it could very well happen. So that night after her excellent talk, I said to the various committee members of UNEX, shall we all tonight try and dream about what may happen in the fields this summer, and we've got to make an affirmation that we will remember it and record it. So they all agreed, and I did exactly that before I went to sleep that night. And I had a curious dream about a long straight line of intersecting circles, and I thought, dear, they're frightfully boring because we're past the linear stage. We're now into very complex circular things with fractals and all the rest. And I very nearly didn't report this. But then I thought, well, that's not being very scientific. So I rang through to the secretary and I said, this is exactly what I've dreamt. And I'm going to try and access the dream again tonight and ask for greater clarification. Well, I never could. And then about 2 months later, I was flying over the field and blow me down. I flew over the formation of my dream. And I can tell you, I almost fell out of the airplane. I just simply
absolutely amazing.
Could not believe it. There was this long line of intersecting circles. It was mind-blowing.
In my own investigation of crop circles, which admittedly is minimal, I ran across under the name Joseph E. Mason, who has a website called greatdreams.com. And
right.
He makes a wonderful, wonderful connection between the crop circles and dreams.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you're familiar with him.
No, I'm not.
It's a a wonderful piece of work in terms of logic. And I guess my own reaction is that we are, in fact, communicating back via those dreams. I think that people who have an opportunity to see a crop circle will probably experience a very specific type of dream. And to me, it's kind of like a doorbell ringing. You see the crop circle. The dream is a doorbell. Now it's time for you to do something.
Well, I think the crop circles certainly have many, many curious and varied effects on people. I think, well, I've got over 600 reports sent in by people on my database, and I went up with a colleague of mine to the Royal School of Medicine, and we tried to put these 600 reports into categories, which was a mighty job. And I'll just tell you what we did. We got a category called oral. Now, there's a very, very strange metallic taste that I and several other people get when we sometimes when we go into crop circles. We don't get it anywhere else. And I call it metallic simply because I can't think of another word for it. But it's there, and it's cloying, it's in phases, you can't spit it out, it just is there. And it goes, as I leave the crop circle, it goes just as suddenly as ever it came. Now, I was giving a talk in the States at the Fortean Society, and a man was talking, giving a lecture, a very good lecture, about spontaneous combustion. And after I'd given my talk, he came up to me and he said, you know, this is quite extraordinary. He said very, very few people ever survived spontaneous combustion. But one person who did, they reported this strange metallic taste in their mouth. So it must be some sort of neurochemical reaction to the force within, the residual force within the circle.
You maintain a health questionnaire on your website.
Yeah.
And what you're talking about right now, it sounds dangerous to me. Are crop circles dangerous?
Well, no. I'd just like to clarify that, because that's a good question. I think people react on an individual basis. So far as I'm concerned, crop circles are benevolent, or the intelligence, because I believe there's an intelligence behind this phenomenon, it's a benevolent intelligence. But how we react to different things is rather like how we react to different foods. Certain people may be allergic to certain foods. It's not because there's any sort of benevolence in the food, it's just purely how their metabolism or their system reacts. And I might be sitting in a crop circle feeling absolutely fine, and the person next door to me may be feeling frightfully nauseous. And so and I do say, because we don't know exactly what's happening, I do say that if anybody is pregnant, they shouldn't go in. And if anybody has got a health device such as a pacemaker, which is geared by a battery, they really should not go in. Because we've had so many electrical failures, camcorders, mobile telephones, videos, all manner of things. The batteries seem to get affected and drained. The amount of times I've been flying, and I've just got the perfect picture in my lens, and the damn thing won't work. And I fly away, and my camera is fine. Fly back, won't work.
Well.
It
raises some very interesting questions, Lucy. First of all, the entities, and I don't know what else to call them, that create the crop circles, if they have that kind of technology, would they not be aware of the detrimental effects to humans?
Well, I don't think that it's up to them to be able to judge how humans are going to react. I mean, they can't change our metabolism. And how we're going to react to the energies there is entirely a human reaction. And but you see, the strange thing is, I think the majority of reports that I get sent in from the physical point of view are negative. And the reason for that, I believe, is that if you go into a crop circle or you're planning a visit into a crop circle, you are expecting to feel brilliant. It's a wonderful day out, there's great excitement, it's in a magical part of the country. Everything involved is exciting. And if you don't feel well, that is unexpected. And so they very kindly fill in a form and send it to me. On the other hand, a psychological beneficial, but also physically, if somebody feels pretty well, they don't bother to send me a form because they expect to feel pretty well. It's only when they get a sort of dramatic healing that they send in a report on the physical aspect that is beneficial.
So are you saying that there are certain ailments among humans that if they remain in a crop circle, they can find relief from those ailments?
Well, yes, some of them are only temporary. Now, rheumatism and arthritis, they seem to benefit quite dramatically. There's one woman with whom I am regularly in touch, somebody called Leslie Clemenson, who suffers most dreadfully from rheumatoid arthritis. And she and her husband, he is a chartered engineer, I think he is. Anyhow, he's an electrical buff. And quite often when they visit crop circles, he strides on ahead, but her rheumatoid arthritis is so bad that she has to go along very slowly. Well, quite often, in fact, there was one time when she came out of the crop circle, she could keep up with him until her shoes fell off. Her ankles and her feet had so dramatically reduced in size that her shoes actually fell off. But the thing is that this is temporary, that the pain comes back. So what one has to say, what is the cause? What is happening? What is the cause of rheumatism and arthritis? And that is an inflammation. And so it would seem that, in a way, crop circles are acting as anti-inflammatories.
But it does come back, is what you're saying.
Everyone, it does come back. It does come back, but it's quite Moorish, because people think, you know, they get this wonderful relief, so they go back to get more relief.
You know, if you were to advertise that, you would probably have an awful lot of people
running
around farmers' fields. I would never
advertise it, because it's not a permanent cure. People on the psychological side, they benefit quite fantastically. It's rather like out-of-body experiences, you know, when people come back, and they change personalities, they're much more positive, they realize that they can heal, they just see life in a completely different light. And it's the same when many people visit crop circles, they have these really wonderful experiences.
On your website, you have an absolutely stunning array of photographs. I was really impressed with the calendar. I want to let everybody know out there, if you want a great calendar, go to Lucy's website. I'm telling you, folks, it is absolutely amazing. The aerial photographs will just blow you away. They're absolutely stunning. Lucy, were you personally responsible for taking those aerial photographs?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, indeed I am. Yeah, yeah, I fly over the circles every year. It's wonderfully exciting. It's absolutely mind-blowing, and if they're coming over here and they want to fly with me, just let me know. And I mean, it's going to cost them, but it's the most really amazing experience.
Lucy, is there a reason why so many of these cross circles seem to be focused in your part of the world?
Well, now, that's a good question, too, because somebody called Glenn Broughton and a colleague of his, Steve Page, they did a geophysical survey of the area where crop circles appear. In fact, they did the whole of the UK, and they found that 93% appear on chalkland. Now, what's interesting about that is that chalkland has aquifers or springs, water springs underneath the soil, and when the force hits, our understanding scientifically of it is that the force probably originates in the ionosphere. Now, the ionosphere is at its lowest between 2 and 4 in the morning, and the Earth's magnetic field is at its highest. So, therefore, it's really no coincidence that these things happen usually between that time scale at night. When the force hits, it's been calculated that it probably hits the ground with hundreds of thousands of volts per meter, but only for a nanosecond. If it was for longer than that, it would actually burn the crop. And strangely enough, we do occasionally see evidence of charring on the fallen crop. The force then, when it hits the ground, it softens the plants at the base, and they just fall quite naturally. And then the force travels up the stem of the plant, and it's rather like a heating up process. It breaks down the molecular structure as it goes. It changes the cells. It stretches the cells. And it's rather like put a baked potato in a microwave oven. You'd prick it so that it wouldn't explode because it's going to cook from the inside. It's really the same principle as the force travels up, and you get little joints on the plants. And when the force is too great, it comes bursting out through tiny little what we call expulsion cavities at the nodes.
You have some pictures of that on your website.
Yes, I have. I believe I have. And I forget the rest of the question. What was the rest of the question, Christopher? I forget what you said.
Oh, I think you covered it pretty good. Lucy, you've got so much information. I mean, a person could spend, you know, 2 or 3 weeks talking to you about.
Well, I could spend all day talking about it because it is such an enormous subject. It covers every single subject from physics to theology, from music to math to geophysics. Oh, yes, now we were talking about the geophysics, weren't we? Because
yes.
Of the aquifers underneath. And so when you get an electrical force hitting the ground and you get water underneath, you get something called negative and positive ions, and they act rather like magnets, you know, like a positive-negative magnet. They act as attractors. Now, I was in the States giving a talk in Vermont last October, and somebody called Jim Wilson, who is a really good researcher in America, I was asking him if he'd done any geophysical surveys, and he said yes. So I said, well, what's the result? And apparently, most of them in the States appear on limestone. Now, that, again, is a porous soil, and there would be aquifers underneath that, too. So that's interesting, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
You're getting a consistency there.
On your website, you have a couple of what I would call oddities, and I'm not sure why they're there, so I want to bring them out.
Right.
Okay. Let's talk about what you call unreliable speakers. What is that about?
Uh-huh. Well, that was when I was running Unext, and I would book a speaker. And at the last minute, he didn't turn up. And sometimes they never even notified me. So you can imagine if I only had one speaker in the evening and they were due to start at 7:30 and they weren't there by 7, you start, the minutes would start ticking off, you see, and you'd have a hall full of people.
Yeah, I got you.
And the tension would mount, and I was wondering if I was going to have to do a song and dance routine.
You talk about a song and dance routine. You know, Lucy, we go through that almost every day on the air.
Really?
Well, of course, it's live radio. Like the problem we experienced, and it was my fault. You know, I called the producer through a silly system, and I should have called him through my phone.
Oh, right.
But live radio is like that. You know, you never know what's going to happen. And so sometimes I'm stuck too. Like all of a sudden, the guest disappears. I got to do a little song and dance, just like you said.
Yes.
It does happen.
Yeah. But, you know, on each occasion, it was quite extraordinarily lucky because somebody in the audience said, well, I'm familiar with that person's work. Would you like me to discuss it to the best of my ability? And each time they gave a fantastic talk.
Well,
quite amazing.
I am sure. We only have a minute left. I want to get to this question. I want to talk for a minute about the skeptics.
Yeah.
And on the website, on the web, there's a lot of them. One of which is Robert Todd Carroll. Now, let me quote from his website. A crop circle is a geometric pattern, often very intricate and complex, appearing in fields, usually wheat fields, usually in England. Most, if not all, crop circles are probably due to pranksters. How would you react to that?
Well, I would ask him what research he's actually done. For instance, one of the areas of research, quite apart from the brain activity, hormone tests and all the rest, one research I did 1 year was measuring the protein content of seeds taken from inside a crop circle and seeds taken as a control sample from way outside. And when they were measured blind, the protein level of the ones taken from inside was 40% higher than the ones taken from outside. Now, if he can tell me that human beings do that, I think I might go along with him. But to me, that is an absolute impossibility.
Yeah, exactly. And what you just brought up was the argument against hoaxes. These plants inside crop circles are changed in a way that is beyond human ability.
Yep.
It's that simple, folks. You know, Lucy, I've got a whole list here of your articles, and I was going to go through them one by one, starting with the Bluffer's Bluff in 1993.
Oh, yes.
But I am out of time.
Oh, well, never mind. We've had a really good chat, and I've enjoyed it.
Oh, Lucy, I really appreciate you coming on our show today. Your expertise and the information you're handing out to people is very much needed. It really is. But I have to say goodbye.
Yes.
And
well,
Lucy,
you
have a wonderful day, and thank you for giving us such a wonderful presentation.
Well, thank you, and goodbye to you, and goodbye to your lovely audience.
I thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Yes, goodbye.
Folks, that ends our afternoon adventure. Until next time, this is Nevin Campanella wishing all of you health, happiness, and a safe journey on your chosen path. Bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.